This is episode 500, the half ton. So, people say, I'd die for my family. But the question I want to explore with you today is, would you live for them? And I know that might sound a little bit corny, but go with me, because after the most life-altering 12 months of my existence to date, I want to talk to you about what becoming a father, along with 500 episodes of this show, has taught me about human behavior, about psychology, about weight loss, and about recovery from disease. And this is probably particularly interesting if you either have kids, want kids, and you want those kids to grow up healthy and strong, which in the modern day feels almost impossible. So if that interests you and you want to celebrate 500 episodes, then keep listening. Even as a scientist and nutritionist, I was secretly trapped in binge eating and hooked on sugar. And let's be real, the so-called solutions can feel overwhelming. Calorie counting, restrictive diets, weight loss pills, surgery, and even injections. I'm Maddie Lansdowne, and the truth is, more nutrition facts aren't the answer. It's understanding why we eat the way we do. And you don't need to be perfect to achieve great health either. That shift changed everything for me, and now I share it here as the host of the Real Weight Loss Coach podcast, where it's my mission to help 1 million people break free from the yo-yo diet cycle for good, by bringing you the conversations that really matter in nutrition, health, and psychology. And I'm not afraid to challenge mainstream health advice when it doesn't stack up. Are you ready? Let's begin. What's up, my healthy friends? Oh, I'm so excited to be celebrating 500 episodes, and thank you for being here, and thank you for being a part of the journey, one of the many people that tune in, and your loyal listenership. I don't know if I just made that word up, but I'm so grateful for it. And I know that sometimes it might sound like, you know, social media people or influencers or podcasts, they're always talking about gratitude. But one key to success, if you look around and you read books and you discover some of the secrets that people have behind their success, gratitude is one of them. And I genuinely feel a sense of gratitude for every single person that listens and the whole community that we have around the podcast and our programs and now our retreats and even our merchandise, which if you're watching the video, you would have just seen as well, or some of it at least. So I'm so just thankful. And second to that, I just can't believe that I've recorded 500 episodes, or at least we've released 500 episodes. It's just that's a lot of episodes. That's so many hours of stuff and information and content. I'm proud to say that I've made it this far. You know, the average podcast doesn't really get past 20 episodes and doesn't ever see more than, you know, I think last time I looked, it was about 120 downloads approximately on the average podcast. And we're about to clock 1 million, which is just, you know, just insane. So thank you. Thank you. And we've got tens of thousands that listen every month routinely. So I know we've got a very loyal listenership of people, or listener base of people that get something from this podcast. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And if you want to help me celebrate this 500, please share the episode, this one, or give us a 5-star rating, writing reviews. Every single person that has given us a 5-star rating or written a review on Apple Podcast or written in the comments on Spotify or whichever platform you're on, that is what keeps this show going, because that's the currency that the algorithm uses to determine whether or not they should push our episodes towards other people. So thank you. Literally every one of those goes towards keeping this show going for possibly another 500 episodes. So, or at the very least, another 10. So if you've been here for a couple of years, and I know that a lot of our clients in our legacy program called the Consistency Club, which is where you get to after you finish our main program, we've had people in there for near on 5 years, 5-6 years, which is wild that people want to hang out for that long. But I'm really proud of the fact that of the people that join our main program, we have 78% of people stay and join the legacy program, which is the Consistency Club, to keep working on themselves, keep moving themselves forward. And I just bring that up because the people that have been around for the whole 500 episodes or near on 500 episodes, you would have seen me go through a lot, you know, from watching from afar and listening to my opinions and ideas evolve and perspectives maybe shift or get more passionate or less passionate or believe something more or believe something less. And especially clients have seen me go through a lot. And one of those big things is that obviously over the last 2 years, you know, Yali's pregnancy, and then we had the little guy, or we, I didn't do any pushing, but, you know, we had a kid. Like, a lot has changed. A lot has changed. And what's interesting about that for me is that I've always sort of, you know, sort of positioned myself or marketed myself as somebody who works with mothers, who works with mums. And the reason for that, and some people say, oh, this is weird, Maddie, you don't have kids and you're not a woman. But the reason for that is, and I think a lot of people in the health and wellness industry would find the same thing if they just looked into their database, is that the most common person that signs up for health and wellness stuff is a mother, or at the very least, a woman in her 40s plus, 40s, 50s, 60s kind of thing, right? And so that's the reason that I leaned into that sort of mother marketing, if you like. And I've helped a bunch of guys over the time, and you will see in testimonial videos, we've got lads as well. I've got a couple of one-on-one clients that are fellas as well at the moment, but the very vast majority are women because of the way that we talk about emotional binge and overeating and psychology. And most men aren't too excited to unpack that or peel that onion. But the interesting thing about becoming a parent, and it still feels strange to use the word parent because we're not really parenting yet. We're really just keeping this kid alive, which now he's walking. Given he's just clocked 10 months, like he's not even walking. He went from crawling months ago. He started crawling in 5.5 months, and now he's basically running at 10 months. He's very difficult to keep up with. So I feel like parenting is coming because we're starting to say no and stop a lot. But the interesting thing is now I have a far greater appreciation for the clients that I've worked with and a much deeper understanding for the challenges that life throws at a parent in regards to, you know, well, everything. But if we focus in context of keeping yourself healthy, well, a healthy weight, disease-free, all of those kinds of things, I now have an appreciation that I could only intellectualize before. And I think I did a pretty good job of understanding and putting myself in other people's shoes. And I think that's what makes me a coach that people want to work with, or a nutritionist, or a whatever that people want to work with. There's a difference between being really empathetic and understanding with your head versus the lived experience. And although I am not a mother, I work from an office which is in my home. So we have a mother in the house, which is Yali, you know, who's doing all of it. And between the two of us, like, yeah, we really understand what it means to be like, oh, prioritizing myself is actually really hard. So I just want to talk about a couple of things over the journey of becoming a father, which is, again, still weird language to use. We're still at a situation in my family where if we're all together and somebody says, dad, I just look at my dad. And then I realize somebody's talking to me, which is strange. But some incredible things that have really shaped me, particularly over the last year, is, well, one, getting mentally ready for this. And I mean, during, this was before Gabriel was born, obviously, but during the pregnancy, internally as a man, there was this real shift of responsibility of like, oh, it's time to stop fucking around. Like, you're about to be responsible for an adult woman and a child in regards to, you know, clothing them and housing them and feeding them and medical expenses and everything that comes with it, you know? And not just that, that's the bare minimum, right? The next thing is like, plus also providing them a life that is full of beauty and memory and something that means that we don't get to our deathbed. And, you know, I hear Yali say, God, life was hard, you know, or God, life was just, we just scraped by. And so like, I felt the weight of that in the pregnancy to be like, shit, it's time to grow the fuck up. Not that I wasn't before. And I would say I did a lot of healing and growing up in my 20s, but there's a quote by Jordan Peterson where he says, you're not truly an adult until you are responsible for another human life. And for everybody that didn't get to have kids or chose not to, that will probably piss you off. And it'll probably piss you off that I now agree with that statement 10,000%, right? You just can't convey what it means. Just in the same way that I used to intellectualize my understanding of my client's situations, you just cannot convey emotionally what it means to go through that portal and have to be responsible for another life form. And so that was the initial sort of invitation that life gave me, or our relationship produced, to step up. And that all happened kind of internally. And that was a bit of a hard road. And we've talked about that on a podcast before as well, Yali and I. that during when we talked about the pregnancy and stuff, and it was like, ooh, very hard. And then, of course, well, you know, I run this podcast. I'm very passionate about natural health. I'm very defensive and protective against the Western medical pharmaceutical system. And so that led us naturally down a path of choosing home birth. And something I didn't expect to sort of grow out of this situation is that we would become very passionate advocates for home birth. And even in the face of doctors sliding into my DMs telling me that I'm being irresponsible for promoting home birth and all of this kind of shit, and also, I might add, being unwilling to come onto this podcast and debate me over it. Just so you know, every hater that finds their way to me, I invite them on the podcast. I'm like, if you got a different opinion, let's have it out. Like, and I think that's actually missing from society is people having rigorous discourse. You know, occasionally we'll see it in like a really formal setting. Politicians, I mean, that's a terrible example because they just take the piss out of each other. It's not actually rigorous. But nowadays, it feels like the only place to have rigorous discourse is actually podcasts. Like Joe Rogan's hosted heaps of amazing debates between different sides of conversations. Anyway, so we're getting, midwives, or not so much midwives, but more doctors and OBGYNs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Doctors that are looking after pregnant women sliding into my DMs, criticizing our voice and that we have a responsibility to be able to, you know, keep people safe and blah, blah, blah with the size of our audience. And one of the things that I am very, very happy to say is that I am more than happy to promote to our entire audience the idea that home birth is a good idea. And so I will, you know, I believe just as I do with all of the other diseases and all of the other, health regimes and things that I criticize on this podcast, I will put home birth in the same category of it being a smart idea for a lot of people. It's just similar to alternative cancer therapies or alternative disease therapies. It's most of us haven't grown up in a world where that is normal. And so as a result, we have this unfounded fear. And it's really just the fear of the unknown, because if we grew up around home birth or we grew up around alternative cancer therapies or insert other topic, then it wouldn't feel so intimidating. And I actually get inquiries not irregularly from cancer patients. And I work with cancer patients from time to time, not as their primary physician, but as one of their supporting healthcare workers on that journey, focusing mostly on diet and nutrition and that type of thing and detoxification. And the point is that often when people finally get to me, it's often really late in the process and arguably too late for many of them because they've taken so long to wash away the brainwashing that has occurred from just growing up in a society that is dominated by Western medicine. And again, I've said this 1,000 times, but I'm not saying doctors are evil. I'm not saying nurses are evil. I'm not saying that stuff doesn't have its place. But its place on the shelf is what I believe is down the bottom in the back when you really, really need it. Last resort kind of stuff, you know? And sadly, they've turned, you know, birthing or being pregnant into a diagnosis and birthing into a medical procedure. And so as a result, one of the things that surprised me over the last year is that myself and Yali, and we've become a real advocate for home birth and the idea of doing things naturally and avoiding all of the complications, which often people will say happened in hospital. Lucky I was there. But if you look into the data deeply enough and thoroughly enough, you'll discover that most of those problems wouldn't have happened if you weren't at the hospital to begin with. So anyway, Yali and I are going to do a whole podcast on home birth because, yeah, we need to do a few. We've tried a couple of times, but either technology's failed us, our brains have been too tired to actually deliver at the quality we want to. That's something that's like really fires me up and I'm really passionate about it because there's a relationship between the way you're born and the environment you're born into and the situation you're born into and your health throughout your life. One of the things I ask every one of my one-on-one clients in their onboarding call, which goes for about 2 hours, is, how were you born? C-section, naturally, was there a vacuum, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the other thing that I guess moving along, because I can get stuck in that rabbit hole. The other thing that I guess has surprised me as well is that sleep, capacity, stress. I've never experienced a lack of sleep, a lack of capacity, and a stress situation in my body like I have in the last year, which is, I'm feeling it today. I just had Dr. Tarshini, who is actually, if you find her on Instagram, she's fantastic. She's a TCM and acupuncturist. She is Yali's sister. And she was just here actually and just gave me a treatment and my nervous system needed it. Oh my God. Yeah, acupuncture. I love how I feel after acupuncture. My nervous system is very grateful. But the point is, it's been such a hard year for, you know, two sleep-deprived parents choosing what most people would say, and I guess I would agree on some level, to do things the hard way. Because we believe that very passionately that the choices we're making with our son are going to set him up for a much more stable identity later on, a much more rigorous immune system later on. And so many people look at us now, and because we're in this world that's built on convenience, like, oh, just do what's easy, do what's convenient, neglecting the fact that there's only like 100,000, 250, however many bazillion years of women and parents managing children just totally fine. You wouldn't be here if that didn't. And then all of a sudden in the last sort of, you know, 30 to 50 years, all of these conveniences exist, right? And so the consequence to that for us is that we are more tired than the average person, I would argue, or the average parent, and more maybe stressed out. We've got more money struggles because we're choosing to do things differently. And maybe, you know, I'm not here to try and win the stress or the sleep deprived Olympics. Like, we're all kind of fucking knackered, right? But I'm just saying that many people have, you know, that aren't in our inner circle doing things the same way, have kind of rolled their eyes at us or been like, why would you do that to yourself? And this kind of builds into the narrative of this podcast that I'm doing today, which is it's about long-term investment. And we know simply because this podcast exists that most people are bad at long-term investment because most people aren't very good at investing in their health, knowing that in 10 years, things will be better. Most people aren't good at investing in the stock market so that their lives will be better in 10 or 20 or 30 years. You know, that's why the government has to force people to do superannuation. Not that I'm saying it's a great idea. I'm just arguing the point that people, we're stuck in this convenience culture, the right now, solve the problem, don't do hard work, avoid hard things. We're trying to lean into hard things. And the cost of that is that we're kind of burning ourselves to the ground. but this is the beginning of parenthood, probably for everybody, you know? And I guess the other thing is, you know, talking about my clients and you listening, like my empathy, I think my empathy's gone up 10 times for just how challenging it is to look after your own physical health, your physical body, you know, your relationship, you know, like I can see how with the chaos of multiple children, and we don't even have multiple children, but with the chaos of multiple kids and, you know, normal money stress that comes with having kids and family and all of the stuff that keeps people sleep deprived and stressed and focused on the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, I can see how divorce happens. I can see how family breakdown happens. I can see how parents act in a way that they regret, that traumatizes their kids because they're at the utter end of their tether for the 10th time this week, you know? I can understand it on some level. And we've only got one kid, you know? Like, and so I can see if I just like see where things have gotten to in our normal hectic life so far and think, oh yeah, multiple kids. I can see if you extrapolate this out, shit gets crazy fast in lots of different directions, right? So for that reason, my empathy for my clients and for parents in general is just like, you know, there's this weird culture in parenting where it's like when you say something good about yourself or brag about your kid, it's like you're trying to piss everybody else off or you've got to nurture everybody else and be like, I know everybody has a different experience and, you know, like, oh, I'm not saying that you made a bad choice because people for some reason become retards when you talk about children. So same goes here. Like, you know, I'm talking about my experience and the things that I'm happy and proud of. And we should just be happy and proud and empathetic to other parents instead of, you know, like I get friends that brag about their kids and I'm like, hell yes, like brag about your kid. This is awesome. If that kid doesn't have you that's proud of him, like he's kind of fucked, you know? So point is like, I just feel so empathetic for parents now and my clients and listeners and, you know, like most of the people that I've worked with didn't grow up in a time or, you know, didn't do the bulk of their parenting in a time where Instagram was available and all this health information was common knowledge. And I know it's all very confusing in the sense that, you know, we're getting super derailed with the amount of influencers and the amount of voices. And now the food pyramid's gone turned upside down in the US, which I think is fantastic. Maybe I'll do a podcast on that soon. But yeah, I'm just feeling like my heart is a lot heavier, not in a bad way, but maybe my heart is just bigger and more understanding, understand, like having some semblance of understanding for how other people live with kids and chaos and partners and, you know, blah, 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 all the things that make life exist, which leads me to the point of being like, my key realization from this whole year for everyone I've ever worked with and for all of the podcast episodes that I've done and interviews and things I've learned along the way too, is that most people aren't broken. You're not broken. The main issue, I'm certain that the main issue most people have is that they're overloaded beyond imagination. And I would argue that on some deep conspiracy level, that's kind of the point of our governments and our systems. It's to keep us as distracted and as overloaded as possible that they can continue to overreach their control and make things harder for us so that we are compliant and we are not a danger to the system. You know, and I'm happy to do podcasts. Yali and I could go for days on layers and layers of deep rabbit hole stuff on that those kind of topics. Probably Yali more than me. But the point is that I believe it's intentionally designed for us to be so incredibly overloaded that we forget about our own health. We forget about our relationship. We forget about everything because we've all got to be keeping up with the Joneses and we're doom scrolling all of the time, caring about shit that we can't affect, wars in other countries that we've got nothing to do with, you know, people's lives down the road who we don't even know or care about. You know, we're suddenly crying over their Instagram reel or, you know, getting fired up about it, whatever it is, you know, and then all the sports and all the instruments and all of the extracurricular activities and then the amount of work. The amount of work hours that we have to put in just to break even, if not drown, you know, which is a sign that our economy is collapsing, of course. And you know, the Australia that we live in right now is not the Australia that I grew up in, nor is it the Australia that, you know, I think our parents, you know, were sort of living in, you know, enjoying the sort of golden days of Australia. And I don't mean to make this political, but we're raising a child in this situation and running businesses in this world. And so, we are part of the people that are overloaded beyond imagination, and it's leading us to some big questions about how we do life, because where we actually live, which country we should live in, and the feeling of being torn between moving away from family to protect our immediate family from having to live in, you know, this country and the way that it's going, and how absolutely devastatingly hard it is economically to get going, especially if you decided to start a podcast and, you know, do things that way. But yeah, I think that's the number one thing. It's like the reason there are so many fat people, the reason there are so many sick people is because we're overloaded beyond imagination. I think, and I'm speaking specifically to the parenting population when I say that. So I guess, you know, one thing that I've learned from working with hundreds of clients now, and this has kind of changed over time as well, is that I guess podcasts and clients and parenting and or becoming a parent, I feel like a bit of a fraud saying parenting because I'm not yet parenting, but is that like people don't change because of vanity. Everyone that's gone through a weight loss program, including mine, that failed or didn't see it through or gave up or quit, it's highly likely that they just wanted to be less fat. That's not enough. That's barely motivating for more than 5 seconds, right? And vanity doesn't get anyone far that's beyond, if you're older than 25, you really don't get far with vanity. You know, you see the young guys in the gym and the young girls in the gym trying to get, and maybe a little bit older, depending on your profession or how sexy you want to look on Instagram, but vanity doesn't get people very far. The normal people, you know, not the people that are, you know, trying to be sex symbols on social media, but it's like getting a bigger booty or getting bigger biceps or getting abs. Like that's all vanity. And young people are driven by vanity. You see them in the gym, you see them all over social media. Very few people in the real world, you and I consider myself, you know, if you were to consider me ever an influencer, I would consider myself an extremely real influencer. Like I'm totally honest with you about everything. And I live very honestly. Like your average person, you know? And I think that those that came to our retreat last year would attest to that. But, you know, what happens in order to actually achieve weight loss or achieve health transformation or change the shitty things you've been doing to yourself, to your relationship, to your family, to your situation, to your kids, whatever, is when your why is deep enough. And that's part of what I want to talk to today on this episode 500, you know. I get, this is all about celebration, but I guess I'm kind of just winging it and going a bit profound here. But like vanity isn't going to work. You know, if you're beyond 25 years old, vanity's not going to work unless you work in some kind of sex industry or image-based modeling or, you know, whatever. But you've got to go deeper. What is your why? And what I mean when I ask you, what is your why and how do you get a deep enough why, is don't say what you think people would expect you to say or what you think is socially appropriate. Oh yeah, I'd do anything for my kids, you know? Maybe your why isn't your kids, which is fine. It's not a social crime, but you've got to find the why that triggers you to be like, all right, I'll change. Because in my experience, outside of a catastrophic diagnosis or a loved one or a partner or a child that died or is dying from some kind of health condition that they inflicted upon themselves by eating terribly or that they caught because, you know, their body's just so weak because they haven't looked after it. Outside of those scenarios, very, very few people snap. They rarely just snap into action and wake up tomorrow. And everyone that joins a health program or a weight loss program is hoping that that'll kind of happen, you know? Like, part of marketing for those things is trying to say to people, this is the time that it's going to work. And the truth is, I don't know if it's going to be the time that's going to work unless we figure out what is your why. How deep can we make your why so that when you get up tomorrow, choosing the shitty things is actually feels like it's a clash with your identity now. It doesn't happen overnight. Never will, right? Never will. And I've only seen it happen overnight with people that are in dire, dire situations or, again, that had a loved one that was killed or died from something similar. Or they see themselves in their parents as their parents are dying. So that realization for me across the last year has really shifted, because without actively doing this, it's just kind of happened within me that this idea that me as the man, you know, and now I've got a son, my son is going to be looking up to me as a model for how to go about life, how to navigate relationships, how to treat his mother, how to be in the world, how to go to work, how to go to war, right? You know, like he's looking at me for all of that kind of stuff. And I've never found a motivator quite as strong as this. Like all of the things that I've ever done, you know, trying to look good and trying to get my body in shape and trying to do this and do that, it's all been about vanity metrics on some level. It's also been about my own internal happiness. But being happy and looking good or having good things and nice things, they're still vanity metrics. And you're allowed to want those, by the way. Who doesn't want to have a six-pack? I do. Like, you know, and even when I was swimming, you know, at an elite level, you know, as a teenager, I didn't even have abs. But the point is, I would still love abs. I still want Lamborghinis. I still want all of the things that are vanity metrics, but they're not enough to move the needle, right? And so I've never found a bigger motivator to show up and be a good man than having a son that I know, especially now he's starting to be very playful and starting to, you know who you are and start engaging with you in a way that's like, you know, mimicking. And it's like, oh, the weight of that responsibility really sits with me. And so, you know, I want him, and sure, and they, well, there's a few places that I was just going to take that idea. But one thing I've also heard from parents and other people and, you know, my parents is one of the things that triggers you or pisses you off the most about having kids is when they start to do the things you don't like about yourself. So the irony is that you start getting these little mirrors that are running around triggering you because they're doing the same things that you believe are your own failing, right? And so that adds for me, that massively adds to the responsibility. And it's like, whoa, if my son is pissing me off because he's doing what I do, then I need to fix that in myself, right? I've got to be a leader. And I keep in mind, I'm not trying to paint myself as some perfection, picture of perfection or father of perfection or anything like that. This has been the hardest year ever. And another thing I've found is that this year, a lot of my old triggers came up, a lot of my old wounds, because, you know, two of us are so, you know, just sleep deprived beyond imagination and tired. And it's been a very, very difficult year financially because both the podcasts and our programs have been struggling because of the introduction of three things. Inflation has made things very hard for a lot of people. ChatGPT, people think that they can get their solutions just by asking ChatGPT, although no, we haven't seen any decline in obesity numbers or disease numbers in that time. It's just the illusion of getting help. So we've got inflation, ChatGPT. And then I guess the other part of that is that, I was going to say something else, but, you know, also ChatGPT released ChatGPT Health. But the other thing I was going to say is Ozempic and all of those drugs. People feel like, oh, I can, you know, I can get solve all of my problems with these medications, which is why the program that we're running at the moment is in direct competition with those pharmaceutical weight loss options and surgical options, because I want to help people avoid that. Anyway, point is that it's been a very, very hard year for me as the quote unquote leader of the family, the provider, and it's been the hardest year ever for me to actually provide and make ends meet. And it's been the most stressful and challenging ever. And all of these wounds that I thought I'd fixed and healed and haven't really come up in a long time, it turns out that the way to get to your triggers and your wounds is just not sleep for a little while, and you'll realize you haven't done much work or you haven't done enough work. So that's been confronting and embarrassing and heavy. And the clash of all of this is everything I've just said about being this model of masculinity and leadership and fatherhood and, you know, being the man that I want my son to look up to, and trying to embody that, like that is paired with being a fucking human and being not perfect and being a bit broken and having my own story and trauma that affected me in a certain way and navigating the shitty parts of my personality as they erupt out of me like a volcano. You know, one of the reasons I'm so, you know, inspired and inspired's the wrong word. I guess fueled is probably better. One of the reasons I'm so fueled about natural health is because I'm someone who's good in combative scenarios. I'm good at going into battle. And that's not always a good set of skills at home or in a relationship. But I'm happy to go up against doctors. I'm happy to go up against Big Pharma. I'm happy to go up against Victoria Police, you know, in court, which I've done before and defended myself, you know, had a case that I put $3.4 million into, as in what I mean by that is I sued Victoria Police for $3.4 million. Defended myself in court 5 times, didn't hire lawyers. Like, you know, I'm not sitting here to brag, but I won those cases, by the way. But the point is that, oh, disclaimer, they wouldn't let me collect the cash. Whole nother story around that. But the point is that this combative energy that is within me, which comes from my own trauma story, that I'm defensive and combative, there's a good side of that. Is that I'm usually the guy that'll go in and protect when most people will stay quiet. I'll call people out when most people stay quiet. Downside to that is when you're sleep deprived and you've got a little kid crying his face off and you've got Mama Bear who's tired and sleep deprived, is that, oh, hello, triggers. Hello, trauma. Like, oh, Old Faithful. So I just want you to know that, like, you know, my empathy for people has gone up because I'm understanding that navigating this myself and having to feel like I'm doing the work again on my old shit that I thought was gone, combined with trying to be this great leader, is the challenges that we all face. And that you're a human and I'm a human. And that bit right there where I said, I'm a human, it's what you need to do for yourself too, is be self-empathetic. We're going to be imperfect. We're not going to be great at all of this. You know, and so, but at the same time, for me, this is a why that is powerful enough to get me to psychologists, to get me to the gym, to get me to the farmer's market, you know, to get me working out more often, to lifting heavier, to get me working harder and in this office more often, which is just a necessity at the minute, given the Australian economy has made it so devastatingly hard for us to live a life that's even in remotely okay and stable. Because you're listening here, I can safely assume you're an absolute legend. And so if you want to keep this party going, I'd love to invite you over to follow me on Instagram or YouTube, both under the same name of The Real Weight Loss Coach. Over there, you'll find different content in both places. It's different. So heaps of bite-sized pieces of information. So if you want to learn lots of things really fast with a bit of a scroll, or simply you just prefer some visuals, then scroll over to The Real Weight Loss Coach on Instagram and YouTube. So see you there. Thank you. And let's get back into the episode. So the other thing is too, if we were to ever have more kids and particularly a daughter, oh my God, I feel like the motivation goes to another level as the man of the house, right? Which is, it's like if she's growing up looking at me as the model for the standard of men she should have in her life, whew, oh my God, you want to make sure your daughter doesn't end up with a fucking dropkick? Like be a strong, powerful, emotionally intelligent father. Now let's hope I can do that too if we were to ever go down that path. So, but again, for me, that's one hell of a motivator. And I guess the thing to say is, you know, you notice none of this has anything to do with abs or getting a chiseled jawline or looking young or having a perky butt because I do so many squats. You notice how none of it is about that. So my question is, what is your why? Because you, like, no matter what the disease, no matter the weight, no matter how many things you've done before, if you cannot tap into your why, like what comes up every time you sort of do stuff, you do life, you do any hardship, what is the why? And you got to check with yourself as well. You got to check in that your why isn't just a why that you are parroting to yourself or other people when it's actually not true. Because I think it's really easy for us to get sucked into those scenarios where, oh yeah, I'd do anything for my kids. Like, and it's not a crime to say that you wouldn't. You know, you've just got to get clear on what fuels you. Because some people love going to work because they love it. It fuels them, you know. Like, part of my going to work is that I get to feel a level of importance and significance and build, you know, that masculine stuff of building something and trying to conquer and grow and all that stuff. Like, you know, that's partly me too. So it's not I go to work for my kids. That's not entirely true, right? That's part of it. And it's part of it's Yali. And part of it's probably the biggest part is probably me. That's why I started this journey long before our family even existed, you know? So you need to get really clear on what is your why and be like, put it through a bit of a filter or a detox process because you want to find out if it's actually real. So I guess with me talking about my motivation and the things that I've experienced along this journey, I want to pose a couple of ideas or questions to you because a lot of people say that they die for their kids, you know, or that they work all day for their kids, or you might get in a fight with your partner and you're like, yeah, the reason I'm not here is because I'm trying to pay for you and the kids and for us to have a good life, you know? So I got some questions for you. If you'll work yourself to the bone or you'll die for your kids, what about this? Would you eat healthy for your kids or your family? Because eating healthy means that your whole body runs better. You can work harder. You can show up better. You can be a better leader. You can be healthier. You can be clear. You can be non-avoidant, right? Would you eat healthy for your family? The next one's obviously, would you exercise for them, right? Because sitting around on the couch every time you get home from work or just lazing about is just teaching them to laze about. And this, like, you're giving them a manual for how to get fat, right? That's not what you want for your kids. And whenever you say stuff, whenever we say stuff like, you know, do as I say, not as I do, that's dumb. That's not how life works. We all grow up around adult figures or we latch onto adult figures that we want to be like or we feel the most like. And children, naturally, that's their parental figures. And so this is one of the reasons that I say it's not bad genetics that run in families. You know, it's bad recipes. It's bad life choices. It's the life that they had displayed to them as children as for what is normal and safe to them. Normal and safe, it shouldn't be lying on the couch, doing nothing on the weekends, drinking heaps of piss, you know, and oh, for anyone who's not Australian, drinking piss means drinking alcohol, getting drunk, you know, like, would you exercise for your kids and your family, you know? Would you be a strong person for your family, like physically? Also, it's going to benefit you, by the way, because the more muscle you have on your body, men and women, as you get older, the lower your risk of all sorts of diseases. What about hydration? This is so basic. Would you hydrate for them? And not using tea and coffee and soft drink and soda, but would you hydrate for them? Or alcohol? Because staying hydrated every day is a profound hack. Not even a hack. It's just like a necessity for existing as a human being. If you don't stay hydrated, you will struggle to lose weight even on the right diet and exercise routine, right? It's part of the whole system. So much of your system is trading like on a molecular level constantly with water and hydrogen molecules and oxygen molecules, right? So it helps with cravings. It helps with your mood. It helps with your energy levels, right? It helps keep all of your body lubricated, keeps your gastrointestinal system moving through. Would you hydrate for your kids? It's so fucking basic, but like you die for your kids, but would you hydrate yourself for them? You know? What about your head? Would you prioritize your mental health for them? Because dealing with your stress, being able to cope and manage better means that you're not going to go towards food as a solution or alcohol as a solution or lying on the couch binge watching Netflix as a solution or even worse, sitting on in front of them, in front of your own phone, kind of ignoring them, not really present, And they get to see not only you be unhealthy and not look after yourself, but also disconnect from them with a screen in front of your face, probably whilst the TV's on, right? So all of this is circumvented by looking after your mental health. And guess what contributes to mental health? Eating well, staying hydrated, and exercising. Those three things mean your mental health will be mostly pretty good. Other stuff beyond that is obviously working on your trauma, working on your ingrained coping mechanisms, which a lot of people that we work with in our programs, that's what's going on. They're coping with food or they're dopamine addicted because, again, I talked about this earlier, the world we live in Australia and the West and whatever, I believe it's designed to keep us small, to keep us under pressure all of the time and constantly overloaded. We need to start actively removing the load, the shit that doesn't need to be there, right? So would you prioritize your mental health? Now, the next one is, would you quit your bad habits for them? You know, and it's an interesting question because it's like, there's possibly a lot of those that currently exist in your life, probably a long list of them. And you might be confronted by how long that list is. And just as I said before, you know, often they say that kids are the mirror for you in that scenario. And you start seeing your kids develop the same bad habits. And that might piss you off or trigger you. Or you also might be like, he's just like me. She's just like me. And in the context of this conversation, I'm not sure that's a good thing. So, you know, write down a list. What are the things that you want to change? Who cares if that list is 150 things long? I've referenced Jordan Peterson already in this episode, but Jordan Peterson says when he's talking to young men or anybody really that listens to him is that sit down one night for 20 minutes in silence with no distractions and write down all of the things about your life that you want to change that you can change, right? Because there's tons of stuff we can actually change that are in our power for almost no money, usually no money, because it's really just making a different decision about how we spend our time, our energy, and our resources, right? So would you change your bad habits for your kids? Would you change your bad habits for your partner, right? Or did you pick that partner and in your family, did you choose that environment because, this is where people accept me for me? Because that's a bit of a cop-out too, if you ask me. I think, you know, there's a place and a time and a place for being accepted for who you are and your partner and your family should be able to do that. But there comes a time where we accept that you're a person that's dynamic and occasionally difficult and problematic and also great and amazing on the other times, but also, as part of being here, we expect that you're going to be willing to work on those, you know, that you're going to move forward and you're going to be a great leader by showing us all that you want to change and that you're putting effort into changing rather than surrendering to being like, well, this is who I am. You're all stuck with me now, so deal with it. And I'm totally guilty of saying lines like that throughout my whole adult life, like, this is who I am, you know, like, and sure, but you know, the great thing about limiting beliefs is if you don't change them, you get to keep them. So enjoy that problem recurring in your life until the day you die. another idea is like, would you chase your dreams for them? And, you know, do you want your kids growing up believing that dreams are possible or at least worth chasing? Now, I'm not one of these, at least not yet, I'm not one of these people that thinks like we should tell kids they can do anything and be anything and I give them all of these choices, like, what do you want to do, buddy? And it's like, no, it's my job to lead him in the right direction, especially for his, you know, who knows, the first 10, 15 years of his life until he gets enough of a voice and an opinion and some strength in him to push back and say, actually, this is not what I want to do. And we're like, all right, what do you want to do? And hopefully by then we've really taught him some lessons in commitment. But the point is, I want him to believe that chasing dreams are worthwhile because it's very rarely the destination that makes anybody happy, or it does momentarily, but it's the journey and the hardship and the ups and downs and the battles and the small victories along the way. And you want your family, your partner, your kids to be able to look up to you and think like, things are possible. Like, my dad's figuring it out, you know? He's trying his hardest and he's trying to go after what he likes and what he wants, you know? And I think it's really important to be able to keep the dream alive. And for anybody that's in business like myself, at least for now, you know, like you've got to be tapped into that energy that the dreams are possible because nobody gets into business to stay small forever. Like most people that get into business want to make a disproportionate amount of money to live a disproportionate life in a way that means that we get to give our kids and our family and our extended family life experiences that they never would have had access to. And I mean, the consequence or the risk of that is what we're going through right now, what I'm going through right now, which is that you stay on the other side of the breadline for much longer than everybody else, and everybody thinks you're a dickhead for risking it all. And hey, future will tell. Maybe I am a big dickhead. But point is, being willing to go after a dream or at least something beyond the norm, not because the normal is bad, but because I want to inspire my kids to have that same energy and my family to have that same energy of like, things are possible. And no matter how old we are, if an idea pops up or an opportunity, we can have this energy of like, ooh, what would life look like if we did that? You know, like, ooh, the next chapter. This isn't how I saw things going, but how exciting. Look at these new opportunities, rather than sort of just settling into life forever now, you know? And again, I've said this before with these stupid disclaimers, but I'm not judging you if you're any different to my perspective. I'm just sharing this because it seems like after 500 episodes and about 30,000 monthly listeners, some people want to know some stuff that I'm thinking. So I'm just sharing it. Another one, you know, would you fix your sleep habits for them? Sleep, number one thing that you can do to just get your whole life together, your metabolism together, your relationship together, your parenting together, your, you know, ability to exercise and not injure yourself. Like, sleep is the number one health variable of everything, right? And I guess with all of this, if you start to actually lean into these questions, like, you know, you're leading by example. You are the example to your kids, to your partner, to your peers. And look, the truth is, some of your relationships in your family might have to change. Some of your peers might not want to be friends with you anymore because they'll be offended by you trying to do good things. You know, this is the nature of transformation and healing and growth. And the good thing is, if you go down that path, then all of the people around you are people like you, which are people that are constantly involved in the work and growing and healing and recovering and discovering new parts of themselves. And that's what I love about the friends that we have. And both of us, Yali and I, have had for years, is that a lot of the people that we've got in our lives, we're just constantly on this evolution. And the great thing about friends like that is when the normal variable is growth and evolution and discovery, there's very little judgment for where you go or where you end up, because we're all just on this journey together. Whereas if people have got you sort of in their mind locked into an identity or a personality, that's super limiting. And if the, you know, and you can't really go beyond that, and then otherwise they change the way that they behave with you. So, you know, anyway, I ask all of these questions because when it comes to food and you know, again, I really believe the system is designed to keep us small on many fronts, and food is one of those. And so when we're tired and depleted and overloaded, and you know, leading into the, let's say, shittier versions of ourselves that we know than we know we could be. Like, food is often the easiest comfort when life is hard. Even when life is not hard, it's easy just to accidentally buy super cheap, shitty food, have a little dopamine hit, and be like, "Oh, that was nice." You know, when our life is actually deficient of dopamine and serotonin and oxytocin in other areas, you know, and those are the happy hormones and the love hormones. You know, we actually need to emotionally eat less when we're getting our dopamine and oxytocin from other places. And I guess as well, the other thing to mention is the goal, it's not really control. It's sort of nourishment, developing or making space for capacity that doesn't feel overloaded. And in doing both of those things, you're showing yourself self-respect, right? And what comes to mind as well is the James Clear quote from Atomic Habits. You know, he says, "You do not rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems." And so the systems that, you know, we've got to introduce into our life or have introduced or need to introduce or had already pre-existing are the things that have kept us afloat, you know, like nobody's overweight, nobody's fallen apart, nobody's, you know, up shit creek without a paddle. I mean, we've had super hard times, you know, for various reasons, but point is, so far we've developed enough systems that sort of catch us in the sleep deprivation, in the problems, and whether that be the way that we cook regularly, and we've had to change, and we're in the process of changing the way that we prepare meals every day to make sure that, you know, we're not up super late, right? And so then there's lots of ways to go about doing that, even no matter how busy your family is. Food can be cooking all day in a slow cooker, you know? But developing these systems that it's like, when shit hits the fan, the worst outcome is that we still eat healthy and still go to the gym, you know? And the gym might be in your garage, and it might be that you have to recruit all of the kids in the family to be a part of it. Whatever you've got to do, you know, or maybe it, instead fitness and exercise and eating healthy is a family thing. We all go to the market. We all go hiking on the weekend, or pick the outdoor activity that we're going to do this weekend, you know, normalize that stuff. Anyway. Okay. So I guess the other thing to mention is if you've been sitting on the fence about the programs we run and you relate to all of the stuff that I've just been talking about. So the current program is open in its current form, but it's unlikely to be open again ever in the current way that it sits and exists. So we've currently got a major discount on for maybe the final time, we'll see, that we're running this program. So if you've been listening for a long time and long-time listener thinking like, oh, I'd really love to get involved, I'd really love to do Maddie's program, or you've been on a call with me in the past and you felt like money was the prohibitive aspect to that and it's like, well, it was too expensive. In an attempt to help everybody that's struggling financially, we currently have a massive discount, more specifically because we're running a beta trial version of our program where we have a supplement stack alongside the Emotional Binge and Overeating program. And the idea is that we are in direct opposition to things like Ozempic and Mounjaro. So if you're weight loss medication / surgery hesitant, this program is for you. If you just want to lose weight, this program is for you. If you want to lose weight and loved our programs previously, but you couldn't afford it, now's the time, one and only time that it'll be this kind of price. We do have a supplement stack that is absolutely going to help your metabolism burn body fat better. They're not fat burners. Really important I say that. So I just wanted to let you know. So if you want to show up for your kids, show up for your family, eat better for them, exercise better for them, live better for them, show them that things change is possible, then our program is a beautiful community of people. And I said before, 78% of the people that do our program stay in the legacy program called the Consistency Club. It's such a beautiful community. And being in there, you'll get early access to the retreat, which is already half sold out. So the link is down in the show notes below. Scroll down, click the link. Depending on when you're listening to this, if you're listening to this in the first week or so of it being out, probably spots available, but this is, yeah, things will disappear fast and it will become unavailable quickly as well. Which doesn't mean the program's not available or resources aren't available, but at this price. Well, that's about it, I think. Really. I think that's about it. I've learned a lot this year. I've just kind of gone on a tangent today. And I guess maybe some of the take-home messages really are that your family doesn't need you to be perfect. They need you to be well, you know? Live for them by living for yourself. And they come along for the journey, you know? Like, sure, we're doing lots of things for them all the time, but in this story, we want one that where you don't die, you know, 10 or 20 years before you need to because you didn't look after yourself. And then your kids end up living even shorter lives or dying younger than you did because you modeled a poor version of self-care to them. You know, self-care isn't selfish, you know? And at the very least, self-care can be inclusive of getting everybody and being the leader of the family. Nope, get off the couch. We're going, all of us. Come on, let's go, you know? So as much as you say, I'm gonna ask you the questions again. So you'd die for your kids and you'd work yourself to the bone for them, but would you eat healthy for them? Would you keep yourself well and hydrated for them? Would you prioritize your mental health for them? Would you quit your bad habits for them? Would you chase your dreams for them? Would you fix your sleep habits for them? Would you exercise and stay fit for them? And by doing all of this, would you lead by example for them? Because I believe the best way to love your family is by taking care of yourself, by living for them. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learned anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of the show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.